Let's take your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM, Channel 80, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. Let's get you started as we do every hour with the headlines you need to know. New York Giants cornerback DeAndre Baker pled not guilty to 8 charges related to an alleged armed robbery police say took place last week in Miramar, Florida. Also, Seahawks cornerback Quentin Dunbar plans to plead not guilty to his 4 armed robbery charges later this afternoon. That, according to his attorney, that was the next step for both players. They were both granted bail Sunday following a night in the office jail, in the Broward Sheriff's office jail, satisfying their arrest warrants from the alleged incident. So we'll now see over the next couple of weeks what they decide to do with those charges and how they move forward. Speaking of NFL, on a much lighter note, we got a little bit of drama on social media. Devontae Parker went to Instagram to answer a poll on NFL on Fox's Instagram account, which said, which is tougher, A, make a catch while guarded by Stephon Gilmore, or B, break up a pass while guarding Michael Thomas? So Devontae Parker went in and said A in the comments of the post. That did not sit well with Michael Thomas, who then replied to, quote, for you, yes, go run some numbers up, then you can talk. I lapped you, and you've been in the league longer than me, first rounder. So Parker then responded, got some hard feelings there, brother? Let me get targeted 300 times a game. Woo! They are talking smack, which is only a reminder how thirsty everybody is for competition right now when we are talking trash over Instagram comments. That's where we are. Lastly, a little bit of sports news that actually have to do with something physically happening. The Belmont Stakes will take place June 20th. No spectators. It'll be shortened from its traditional length, usually a mile and a half. It goes down to a mile and an eighth. That, according to the New York Racing Association announcement made on Tuesday. The Belmont's traditionally the third leg of the Triple Crown, but it'll be the first leg for the first time this year. According to ESPN stats and info, the Belmont's been second in some years, but never first. And the race has been run at 1.5 miles since 1926. So getting a bit of a change there, but at least we are moving forward towards something we can all look forward to. It's First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM, Channel 80. Simulcast, of course, on ESPN News. You can check us out there. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. If you missed the first hour of today's show, I would recommend you go check it out. There's a great interview in the first hour with Dominique Foxworth. Go check it out. It's on demand in the First Take, Your Take podcast, brought to you by Capital One. Why settle for average? With Capital One, you can open a savings account with a rate 5 times the national average. Welcome to banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Capital One, N.A., member FDIC. You guys are actually fired up about some of the conversation that Dominique and I were having about the Rooney Rule. Is it working? Is it effective? The owners are about to vote on at least a proposal right now that is out there that would give elevated draft status to teams that select a minority as their general manager or their head coach. It would also give draft benefit to teams that allow coordinators or position coaches to leave that are minority candidates to leave for another team if they're taking a better role. So it encourages the movement of minority candidates into better positions. The question is the Rooney Rule working? A lot of you guys chiming in on that. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. We'll get a couple in here. Ross in Idaho. Ross, what do you got? What's your take on this?
Well, you know, I'm kind of surprised that they can't come up with basically a blind hiring process. You don't see a face. You don't hear a voice. You don't get a name. All you get is a resume. And then the decision is based off that resume. And by doing that, I think you're going to hire the best person possible for the position you're looking for, regardless of their skin color, regardless of their gender.
Well, and altruistically, like I said, in the music world, that's what you have in classical music. I love the concept of it. The hard part about it is interpersonal relationships do matter. So, you know, I'll go back to that's the difference between the classical music world and, let's say, like a country gig or a pop gig. If you're playing music for somebody, if you're going to live on a tour bus for a long time, most of the time you're going to go in, you're going to hang out with everybody, you're going to have that vibe. They got to make sure that you gel well with everybody. Think about any office environment that has a team. If you work for a financial team and you're bringing somebody in, the person with the best resume might also not socially fit in with everybody. So I think it's more difficult than that when you're talking about a head coach, particularly because a coach is not just the resume on paper, it's also the ability to lead men. I would argue that, you know, in women, I should say, I would argue even in Nashville, where I spent so much of my life, when you talk to Derek Mason, the coach of Vanderbilt football, you, whatever his resume may say, you listen to Derek Mason speak for about 3 minutes and you want to run through a wall. Now, that hasn't translated to tremendous success on the field, but certain coaches have that ability to lead. I don't know how you put ability to lead simply on a resume form. That's a difficult process. Of a Cameron in Indiana. Cameron, what's your take on this? What do you got?
Yeah, so first off, I just want to say I think that anyone should get a shot at coaching as long as they earn it, or whatever position it is, earn it. Next thing I got to say is the league should stay out of it. After all, the owners took the risk of establishing a team, and they're going to tell me where I should put and who I should put where. That makes no sense, because without the owners, you have no league, you have no players. So the way I see it, the owners have the leverage, and the league should stay out of it.
Well, let me ask you this follow-up question. Who is the league that you speak of?
So,
I mean, because here's my point to you, and thanks for your take on it. My point is that the league is the owners. I mean, Roger Goodell is a figurehead for the owners that's paid substantially by NFL owners to represent the wants and needs of NFL owners. Like, they pay his paycheck. So I'm not sure who we're saying should stay out of it. I mean, in fact, if the NFL is talking about it, it's because it's something that at least collectively is being brought up in a way that it is something being presented to owners by owners. There is no NFL sort of hierarchy over everything that rules the world, and the owners live in their little books and their little moments. The collective of owners, like Voltron, you know, they're all little individual robots. They come together. They have one person, a commissioner that they pay, that they voted for, that they hired, that represents the league as a whole. So the league is only in the owner's business because other owners want to be in other owners' business. Like, there is no league versus owners in this situation. First, take your take on ESPN Radio. We'll keep taking your take on it. In the meantime, while you guys can chime in on the Rooney Rule, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776, there is some other NFL conversation going on. We finally heard from Aaron Rodgers post the drafting of Jordan Love. I think he was fairly honest and open in his press conference and his opportunity to talk to reporters. Now, Dan Orlovsky joined Max and Stephen A. to talk about what's next for Rodgers and whether or not this is bound to have an ugly ending for Rodgers in Green Bay.
The writing's on the wall. They just went 13-3 and made the NFC Championship game, and there were receivers everywhere you looked in this draft, and Rodgers has never really had one, not a first-round pick, and they refused to trade up to get the guy because they want to hold on to their second-round pick. In order to draft Jordan Love. I'm conflating Rodgers and Wentz a little bit. But in order to draft Jordan Love, they wouldn't go after what Rodgers needed. And according to Bob McGinn of The Athletic, that was because LaFleur felt that after winning 13 games in his rookie campaign as a coach with this team, that he was, quote, fed up with Rodgers' passive-aggressive style, and that this would give them leverage. I mean, guys, once that happens, when you have a future Hall of Famer, maybe not still in his prime, but a guy who threw 26 touchdowns to 4 interceptions for a 13-win team, and the guy whose talent is such that almost no matter what else is around him, whenever the odds come out preseason, who is favored to win the Super Bowl, the Packers are always in that first or at least second group of the highest odds, you know, odds on teams. The fact that they passed on what he needed to bring in his successor tells you that this is not going to end well.
It may not end well for them, but it's going to end just fine for him because he's Aaron Rodgers. And the fact of the matter is that outside of Green Bay, he's widely appreciated. I'm not going to sit up there and say he's not appreciated in Green Bay. Forgive me. I don't partake of my of time in Green Bay. I haven't been to that part of the country too often. I go as far as Milwaukee. That's it. I've never been to Lambeau Field, never been to Green Bay. As far as I'm concerned, it could have cheese surrounding the stadium. I wouldn't know, okay? But I do know this. Aaron Rodgers is a bad man. And this man has been vastly underappreciated by too many folks in the National Football League and beyond. When they talk about this guy, I'm so sick of these talks, these conversations about his personality. Aaron Rodgers is the career leader in NFL passing rating, okay, of 102. He has a better passer rating career-wise than Russell Wilson, career-wise than Drew Brees, career-wise than Tom Brady. This is who Aaron Rodgers is. 364 touchdowns, just 84 interceptions. Ladies and gentlemen, let's put that in perspective. We have lamented lamented the fact that Jameis Winston threw 30 interceptions in one season and should have been the defensive player of the year as a quarterback because of how many damn interceptions he threw and how he gave up about 112 points to the opposition because of it. Aaron Rodgers has thrown 84 interceptions in 15 years. That is less than 6 interceptions per season with that average of a 102 passer rating. This man is not good. He's great. He's elite. His down year was last year, and you just gave the numbers to that, Max. So the Green Bay Packers were stupid for not looking out for him. They were selfish. They, you know, Matt LaFleur and the crew are thinking about themselves moving forward instead of valuing what they have in front of their face, and they will pay the price for it. Make no mistake about it. Now, whether it's in Green Bay or whether it's somewhere else, I assure you it is. Aaron Rodgers won't lose. Will he win a Super Bowl championship? In all likelihood, probably not. But last time I checked, that's not the definition of failure. I'd like to see him get another Super Bowl championship. But Aaron Rodgers will never be a loser. Aaron Rodgers will always win football games wherever he goes, as long as he's quarterbacking in the National Football League. We don't know that about Jordan Love. Hell, we didn't see that at Utah State. Although it wasn't necessarily his fault with the different coaches, different system, different personnel. We get it wasn't his fault. But there are levels to this. And Aaron Rodgers is on a level that very few quarterbacks in the history of football have ever been on talent-wise. So guess what? Somehow, some way, he's going to find a way to be fine. Because when you're that damn great, you will never fall that much. Max Kellerman can prove that because he's been talking about the cliff and then the ravine, but let alone Tom Brady was still winning games as in the postseason. There will not be a precipitous fall off when it comes to Aaron Rodgers. I promise you that.
First, take your take on ESPN News. I mean, Stephen A. promises you that, so it's got to be true. That's all I know. We're taking your take on the Rooney Rule. You guys are fired up about it. We'll let you guys chime in just a second. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. But we're going to head now. This is like a flashback. We're getting to hang out with one of my favorite people and somebody that I got to work with all the time not too long ago. So Sarah Spain joining the show now. Sarah, let's just start clearly here. I wanted to bring you on to talk Last Dance, but we were just talking about Aaron Rodgers, and the world may not know that you actually are, even though you're Bears through and through, you are quite the Aaron Rodgers fan. So what's your level of, you know, sort of confidence in Aaron Rodgers and the Packers relationship moving forward?
I think that as much as he's handled himself well and smartly, understanding the way the media would react to too much honesty about the drafting of Jordan Love and what his future looks like, I think he's also pretty well laid out how things are going to go. Listen, we were so obsessed with the conflict that he might have with LaFleur in his first season last year, and yet look at how much success those two had. I can imagine that going forward with an even more clear idea of the kind of plays that he wants to call and the relationship between those guys, that they're going to be even better. So I think what Rodgers said about the end of his tenure now being more uncontrollable for him is the biggest truth of it all, is that he may want to finish his career with the Packers, but that's not under his control. They may do exactly what just happened with Brady and the Patriots and what happens in so many places where they're ready to move on to the next before that person is ready to say goodbye. And I think he's now open to maybe going somewhere else for a couple of years if that's what it requires.
Yeah, it's going to, you know, gives Gruden a full year to figure out what Aaron Rodgers will look like,
okay,
as a quarterback of the Raiders.
Listen.
Come on now.
Okay.
Let a man live every once in a while. So Sarah Spain joins us, and we're, you know, 48 hours at this point removed from the Last Dance. And Sarah, I really wanted to get your insight on it because obviously Chicago is so wired into you, and the Bulls are such a part of who you are as a sports journalist and as a fan and as of everything, right? So now that you've had the chance to watch this era that you lived so much of, when you watched it, what really stood out to you that you didn't know going in?
Well, so I was like a young teenager during this, and so my focus was not on contract arguments and front office drama. It was on the basketball and the players, and I would consume everything. And so, of course, I read all the articles and newspaper stories about all this stuff, but I didn't internalize much of it. It became this sort of warm bubble of years all blending together of what it was like to grow up with this greatness that was sort of almost an inevitability, even though it never should have been. It felt like, of course we win. We always win, right? We never lose. If Michael's out there, we're going to win. It's going to end with a happy note. And so to revisit it and be reminded and learn for the first time a lot of what was going on behind the scenes was super illustrative. And also, you know, I think as a fan, I've known about Michael's obsessive competitiveness. And you know from when we hosted together, I'm sure it came up a couple times. I've been defending that Hall of Fame speech since the day it happened. I even wrote an article about it for some blog that I worked for way back when it happened, because I felt like people just didn't understand what he was trying to get across. And it's the through line for every part of his life. And you could almost argue in some ways that as fascinating as what Jordan accomplished was, that he himself is pretty simple. I'm going to be the best and I'm going to win. And anything that gets in the way of that is going to be dealt with in whatever way I think is going to get me to that end goal. And the same goes for the Hall of Fame speech. He's been telling us his whole life, you know, this is how I got myself to get up for every single minute of practice and game. These are the people I used to motivate me. These are the people that I felt slighted by and then decided I needed to prove wrong. And that was this movie. And if you don't like that idea, then you probably left feeling the same way you already did about Mike. But I would say there's a lot more people that I've heard saying they like him more, or maybe they were even a fan of the Pistons or some other team and hated him growing up. And then they watch this and now they're like, man, I respect him and I like him. And it actually made me, you know, feel differently about him in a positive way versus what a lot of people were worried about when it started.
We're talking to Sarah Spain on First Take, your take on ESPN Radio. I'm Jason Fitz. I also think it's interesting. Horace Grant went on ESPN Chicago today and said he's never seen a number two player like Scottie Pippen treated as poorly as he was throughout the course of the documentary. What was your takeaway on the way that Pippen was portrayed?
It's interesting. I think one of the flaws, not flaws, one of the difficulties in a 10-part doc is that by the time you get to the end, you forget the beginning, because it was now 5 weeks ago. There was a whole episode about Scottie's greatness, about how he overperformed at the collegiate level, going from a manager to a starter and a superstar. How Michael said, you cannot mention Michael Jordan without saying Scottie Pippen. That he never won without him, that he was the best teammate ever had, that he was so great. Every teammate showered praise on Pippen. They excused him when he got surgery mid-season, whether it was Phil Jackson or Steve Kerr or other teammates. They said, we understood he was frustrated. He was underpaid. He was underappreciated. Everybody talks about how much they love him. But there are moments that have to be brought up. The 1.8 seconds and the surgery, that stuff to me had to be brought up. And, you know, Will Perdue came on our show and said, we've all heard that Scottie's been disappointed in how this movie has turned out. And he said, but Scottie, in these moments, in these interviews, is the one who says, I would go back and sit out that 1.8 seconds again. I didn't want to F up my summer. Right. So his own words are sometimes the things that are causing him to be criticized. So whether that's pride or ego or stubbornness, he's leaning in to these things instead of revising or looking back and saying, now that I look back, like, I should have just stayed in the game. I was frustrated. I could have talked about it afterwards, but I let down my teammates. I mean, the overarching vibe of Scottie Pippen from all of his teammates in Chicago is that he's a top 50 player, amazing, exactly the best Robin to Jordan's Batman. And I think watching this doc, people have isolated those moments that are critical and blown them up in ways that neither his career nor the majority of people kind of see. So I don't think it was unfair in any way. He kind of dug his own grave on some of those.
We're talking to Sarah Spain, by the way. You can check her out, Spain and Company, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, where you're listening right now. It's a First Take, Your Take. I'm Jason Fitz. So I also think it's interesting, Sarah, when you think about Jordan, the front office executive, Jordan, the talent evaluator, hasn't done particularly a great job in those situations. We know that. I guess I expected coming into this that that might change Jordan's tone about Krause and, you know, the entire organization, the way the Bulls handled the end of that regime, but it didn't. So when you watch the sort of the takeaway of the relationship between Reinsdorf and Jordan and the way that still lingers, what was your impression of it?
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if there is some sort of perhaps even subconscious jealousy there from Jordan, that Krause was a genius at team building, that he had such success there. And maybe a part of Jordan, when he moved into the front office, thought, I'm going to show Jerry Krause how this is done, and has not been able to do that. Has not had an eye for talent the same way he could drive himself or have an eye for how those around him would need to be motivated. I think that's all very possible. And I think it can still be true that he can be less than Jerry Krause as a GM, as a talent, as an owner. And still also be able to be critical of what he thought was Jerry's fatal flaw, which was a desire to be recognized as an equal to the players, an ego, a desire to move on to the next, even if the thing that he was working on hadn't yet been fully realized. And in some ways, that's necessary for people running teams. Right now in Chicago, it's an interesting balance between people who are frustrated about decades ago, a team that wanted to move on too quickly from its stars, while simultaneously a lot of people are critical of the Blackhawks right now for being a team that hung on to its stars too long. And they are past their prime and they're on these contracts that are no longer, you know, necessarily helpful to them winning. That's the real balance in sports, right? Is when to know when to move on. And I think most people agree that the Bulls should have deserved a shot to run it back, even on those 1 year deals that Mike talked about. So I think also Jerry Krause and Jerry Reinsdorf and Pip and Jackson, everybody's sharing a bit more of that, blame, I guess, at the end of this, more so than an early on when it felt like it was all on Krause. But remember that all those seeds were planted years earlier when Krause wouldn't let Jordan play when he was injured, when Pippen was underpaid and they wouldn't look at his contract again. All of these seeds were planted. That discord with the front office was there all along, and that's ultimately why it fell apart at the end. There, I think, would have been some ways to redeem this, even if they had thought it was the end, if not for that underlying distrust that had been there for so long. And a lot of that was Krause doing things that I don't know served his team, like talking about how Kukoc was the future while they were still in the midst of winning titles.
I love the perspective. You guys follow her on Twitter, at Sarah Spain. Also, don't forget, Sarah, real quick, before we let you go, you're hosting a virtual blowout spectacular. Tell everybody about it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So basically, May 28th is Sarah Spain, sit at home on your couch and watch me host things day. Because next Thursday from 1 to 4 p.m. Central, 2 to 5 Eastern, is the ESPNW Virtual Summit. So awesome guests, awesome conversations, a lot of fun. Me, Mina, Katie, Hannah Storm, Sabrina Ionescu, top execs at Nike and CAA, and just all sorts of great conversations. Elle Duncan, all your favorites. So that's going to happen from 2 to 5 Eastern. And then I believe it's going to be 8 p.m. Eastern is our Embark, which I'm on the board for in Chicago, that helps South and West Side Chicago Public High School kids go on journeys and experiences outside of their neighborhoods to get inspired to find careers and get creative. That's going to be Hannibal Buress and David Ross and Roy Wood Jr. and the Omis and the Plain White Tees. That's going to be a quick power hour of good content to help raise money for Embark, that since we couldn't have our big gala this year.
Follow her on Twitter, at Sarah Spain. I also just retweeted the link out there for everybody so you can get out there, figure out how to get involved and RSVP and donate. So help make a difference. Sarah, you, as always, you're the best. We appreciate you hanging out with us.
Thanks, Fitz. Love talking to you.
Sarah Spain there with the fantastic Chicago perspective. And look, that's what, if you haven't listened to Spain and Company, she's right in the thick of it and has been for a long time and has done a really nice job of giving you incredible insights on the Jordan era and some of this documentary as we've seen it go down. So it's been really interesting and great to listen to Spain and Company, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio. We'll keep taking your take. What do you want to do with the Rooney Rule? You guys are fired up about it. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Plus, we keep going with our primetime NBA player rankings. You'll find out who's number 9 on the list. You'll find that out next.
Regular season MVP has never motivated me. To be the best to ever play the game has motivated me.
We're counting down the NBA's best with our first take primetime players. That's pretty interesting. Each day, we'll reveal and debate a player from our top 15 rankings as voted on by our ESPN NBA experts. Who's in? Who's out? Who's number one? You'll know I'll have something to say about all this. First Take, NBA Primetime Players, Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN.
Well, if they're going to give us rankings, we're going to react to them. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And let's get some Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And that comes in the form of finding out where we are in the next in our primetime player rankings. It's time to find out who number 9 is.
The 9th player in our First Take Primetime Players NBA ranking is Damian Lillard.
Lillard, long range three.
The 2013 NBA Rookie of the Year. Lillard has 450-point games this season.
61 for Damian Lillard.
The only player in the NBA with more 50-point performances than Lillard this season is James Harden.
Lillard's three is good.
Dame time is here.
Player number 9. Trailblazers guard Damian Lillard.
All right, they got Dame Dollar at number 9, and boy, let me tell you something. We get in the NBA season back, and the Blazers go on a run. I think you'll end up much higher on that list. Max and Stephen A. decided to break down their thoughts on all things Damian Lillard being number 9 on the list.
Leave Portland. That's what it would take. He needs to leave Portland. Period. I'm not saying anything about him, Max, that I did not tell him already. He knows how I feel about him. He knows I think he's big time. I thought he deserved to be first team All-NBA last season, even ahead of Steph Curry, because Steph Curry was hampered by injuries, obviously, and Damian Lillard guided the Portland Trailblazers to the conference finals. And he's obviously 6 consecutive trips to the postseason. This brother has averaged a minimum of 25 a game over the last 5 seasons. He is an all-star. He is a big time shot maker. Him with the ball in his hands under pressurized situations. Just ask Russell Westbrook and Paul George how they feel about him with the ball in his hands when crunch times arrive. We know what Damian Lillard could do, especially James Harden, because he did it to James Harden, Dwight Howard, and those boys against Houston in the postseason years ago. He's a big-time performer in big-time moments. He's a perennial all-star. He is special. And by the way, a beautiful rap artist, too, which you can speak about, Max, if you so choose. What I would say to you, however, is this. I love him and C.J. McCollum together. They are an elite backcourt. I don't believe the two of them together, based on how the league is constructed, can win a championship together in Portland. So one of them has got to go for you to acquire great assets for the other to shine without having to share the basketball. I think that's what it's going to take. I don't think you're going to get that unless one of them is moved, which is why I say, and I have told Damian Lillard this, he will tell you, I said New York City, even though, because that's me being biased, Max, as a Knicks fan, but the Lakers, you know, I would have loved, could you imagine if LeBron had Damian Lillard to kick the ball out to? My God. Lord have mercy. I mean, Lord. I'm sorry. I got distracted. I just started fantasizing right now. LeBron James and Anthony Davis with Damian Lillard to kick the ball out to. Who could pull up from 40? Literally 40. I mean, oh, that would be something special, but I'm allowed to fantasize. I'm allowed to dream. That ain't going to happen. But that's what I think it would take. I don't believe that Damian Lillard will ever win a championship in Portland, because I don't believe Portland will ever have the assets to win the chip in that city. I just don't.
Stephen A., don't believe that time is money. Money is time. When you stay focused, man, you look up and your money is fine. Damn dollar. Dame can rhyme.
That's right.
Damian That's Lillard right. can win a he's championship not, he's in Portland. Special. It's possible. But in order for that to happen, Neil O'Shea can't just be a very good GM, which he is. He's a very good, an excellent GM. He has to be a Hall of Fame. He has to be a great GM. And what do I mean by that? Primetime free agents don't sign in Portland. They never have. Maybe they will sometime. But, like, people really need to think about this. The only cities that prime-time free agents sign, and I don't mean guys who might make an all-star team, I mean guys who might win an MVP, are warm-weather cities and major metropolitan areas, even with a history, because they don't do it in New York until KD and Kyrie did in Brooklyn. But the Knicks don't get prime-time free agents, really. Allen Houston, mate, right? So what do you have to do? Can Lillard be tied for the best player in a championship team? Yes. For him to win a championship, he's going to need another guy at least as good as him. C.J. McCollum, it's like excellent. That Nurkic is excellent. Not as good as those two, but very good piece. O'Shea has done a great job getting talent to Portland through the draft. What they need to do now is probably draft and develop a wing who can be an all-star caliber player.
First, take your take on ESPN News. I'm not going to react to anything that the Blazers need to do drastically differently, because let's understand that they came into this season with sneaky expectations. Now, the fact is, due to some injuries and a slow start, they didn't meet some of those expectations. But do we believe that they couldn't go on a run? I don't know. If I'm a Blazers fan, I still think that, man, if we get some truncated version of the season and a playoff moving forward, it's going to give me opportunity to get something done and do something special. That's Straight Talk. Straight Talk Wireless, everything for less, only at Walmart. We want to keep taking your take. You guys are fired up about all things Rooney Rule. First, take your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. We've had a lot of discussion about it today. I'm happy to let you guys chime in. Becky in Minnesota. Becky, what are your thoughts? What do you got on the Rooney Rule?
Well, I'm looking at a little different take, and then it's more our career path between coaching and playing, because all these coaches have college degrees, and they know Mike Tomlin and Brian Flores and Anthony Lynn all went and got their college degrees. And so I'm just wondering if more people need to stay in college and get in that queue.
Well, yes, as the money, it used to be so much different between the NFL and college football that they were much different tracks. You know, you wanted one or the other. You wanted the NFL for bigger profile, bigger money. That's no longer the case. So, yes, there is some level of, you know, the ability to go back and be part of the college game. I think for that, though, for a lot of coaches, comes down to what really excites you. College coaches, especially assistant coaches in the college game, are faced with so much recruiting work to do, so much work doing tracking students. It's really about a love of the university you go to versus a pro NFL coach who is in more of a situation where they're about the X's and O's and supposed to be about moving forward in that sense. So I understand what you're saying about the degree. Now, part of that is because when you're done playing, you're trying to figure out what's next. So are you going back and finishing your degree out of necessity, out of I don't know what I'm doing with my life right now, or out of going straight into the pipeline of being able to coach? I will say this. If you've been a successful quarterback that knows how to teach the game and teach the position of quarterback, I don't know that a degree necessarily helps you on that too much. And without going into my other tangent, this is why I do believe that athletes should be given the opportunity to major in their sport. If you had the opportunity to major in football, like I had the opportunity to major in violin performance, yes, that exists, then you could actually learn things that you need to know to make you a better coach. So schools could be doing things to help the coaching tree in general. Al in Pennsylvania, always love it when Al calls. Al, what do you got, man? What's your take on this?
Hey, Jason. Hey, thanks for taking my call. Before I get started, I want to ask you a question first.
Okay.
Do you know who the first minority head coach was to win a Super Bowl?
Tom Flores, I believe.
Okay, yeah, you're absolutely right.
I would take that from my beloved Raiders, yes.
Absolutely. You know, and he won two of them, as a matter of fact. So here's a guy that Al Davis was hiring minorities. He had hired two minority coaches before anybody else I ever hired one, because later on in that same decade, he hired Art Shell. Tom Flores, naturally, was the first to win, he won two Super Bowls, which made Jim Plunkett the first minority quarterback to win a Super Bowl. And I've always taken objection to this being called the Rooney Rule when Al Davis was hiring minorities long before this Rooney Rule came out.
You're not wrong about that. I think it's called the Rooney Rule because it was the Rooney family that proposed the rule be instituted. But I've long since said, as a Raiders fan, I'm proud of the fact that Tom Flores, Art Shell, are coaches that were hired without question. And in fact, when I have high level questions on what things mean around NFL, the NFL topics, if I've got something really deep I need an understanding on, Amy Trask is somebody I go to on Twitter all the time that was a front office executive for the Raiders as well. So, you know, I want to live in a world where every team hires male, female, black, white, doesn't matter what your nationality is, doesn't matter where you're from, just matters. Can you coach? Can you run a franchise? That's where we want to live. Unfortunately, that's just not happening. And again, as Jim Trotter pointed out when he tweeted about this from the NFL Network, when he pointed out, we have the lowest rate right now that we've had in 17 years. Now, it should also be pointed out, as was tweeted by the NFL Network and Trotter, and as has been verified by ESPN, right now it looks like the proposal that we've been talking about to vote on this has been tabled. This is from Jim Trotter a little bit ago, said NFL owners have tabled the resolution to incentivize the hiring of minority coaches and general managers per a source. I'll go back to the name I just mentioned, Amy Trask, who I think is smarter than virtually everybody on this, who then quote tweeted it and said, this is what is most often done when there are not enough votes to pass a proposed resolution. Trust me on this. Okay. I do trust Amy on this. She would know. So what she's saying is this isn't going away, but there's not enough votes right now to make it happen. So it's at least been temporarily tabled. We're not tabling your take on it. I want you guys to keep chiming in. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. We'll take more of your take on the Rooney Rule Plus. Sam Acho joined First Take to discuss his ideas on how to make the Rooney Rule more effective. You hear that next. First Take, your take, ESPN Radio, ESPN News. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80 and ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. If you missed the second hour of the show today, go check it out on demand at the First Take Your Take podcast. Some great stuff from Sarah Spain with us. Brought to you by Capital One. With Capital One, you can open a new checkings or savings account. No fees or minimums. Welcome to banking. Reimagine what's in your wallet. Approval required. Capital One, N.A., member FDIC. I know you guys want to chime in on the Rooney Rule. We'll let you do that. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Before we get there, Sam Macho was absolutely great today on First Take as he discussed the NFL's proposal for minority hiring incentives and what really realistically needs to be done to fix whatever's going on with the Rooney Rule.
I think the expansion of the Rooney Rule will have a very minimal impact. I think the problem that I'm seeing with the NFL is that they like making minor changes that are really insignificant. You go back to the history of the Rooney Rule. In 2003, that rule was implemented, and 3 years later, you had two black coaches coaching in the Super Bowl. I don't know if anyone really understands how statistically significant that is. There is less than a 4% chance that you could have two black coaches in the NFL coaching in the Super Bowl. And so you saw a huge upswing there. You saw a major benefit. Well, fast forward 17 years later, there's three black coaches currently right now in the NFL, head coaches. That's a problem. And there have been minor iterations to the Rooney Rule. So if you keep on making these minor iterations, you're not going to see a major change. There needs to be a major upheaval of the entire system.
That's interesting. You talk about two black coaches 3 years later, and then all these years later, only three black coaches. Is that are you implying that that's the result of owners or GMs learning to game the system? In other words, it was working early on, and then they adapted and figured out a way around it?
I'm saying that there's an opportunity problem. Everyone talks about this being a diversity problem. It's not. There's an opportunity problem, and that same problem exists in corporate America. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing about where we're at now is that it took a pandemic, a global pandemic, to be able to get a chance just to see what corporate America and the NFL looks like. You saw people who are in the working class, I'll use this as an example, 70 to 80% African American, who are the workers. And you've got the owners and the general managers and the coaches are predominantly white. Three out of the last 20 hires of head coaches have been white. That's an issue. And you talk about this being an offensive league. You talk about there being a trend towards offensive coordinators being promoted. Here's the issue with that. And that may be true. Eric Bieniemy, offensive coordinator, top offense in the league. He's not a head coach. Byron Leftwich, offensive coordinator, top offense in the league, African-American as well. He's not a head coach. And so, yes, the system is being circumvented, but the issue behind it is that it's this issue of cronyism is really what it is. You've got coaches and general managers hiring people who look like them, and that's an issue. That's a problem. You're not hiring the best candidate. You're hiring the candidate you're most comfortable with.
First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. That echoes the sentiments of some of what we talked to Dominique Foxworth about earlier today. Look, there isn't a perfect solution to this problem, but there is a problem. If there wasn't a problem, then they wouldn't have instituted the Rooney Rule in the first place. And this isn't just about expanding the Rooney Rule. This is about fixing a rule that isn't working. If the entire intent of the rule was to put the best candidates in front of the right people to make sure that the best candidates get hired, no matter what they look like, is that happening? I think we all know the answer to that is no.